When we open our hearts and minds to possibility, infinite inspiration awaits. When we put questions out into the world and take some action without holding tight to what the result needs to be, things open up for us. People get delivered onto our path, hinting at the next step. We can bring this openness to the writing practice itself, actively seeking out inspiration, but also being open to finding it in unexpected places. This is the territory of what if, spoken with a hopeful heart. Hello there, and welcome to episode 4 of the Fearless Writer podcast with me, Beth Kempton. I'm so glad you're here. I've created this podcast to encourage you along your writing path. It's a companion to my book, The Way of the Fearless Writer, which is where the opening words of this episode were taken from. I hope you'll read that book and love it, and that together with this podcast, it inspires many words of your own to flow. In today's episode, we're going to explore what it means to choose the writing path, to seek out confirmation that the path is the right one for us, and to take the next step along it with confidence and hope. What I really want you to know this week is this. This path is meant for you. You get to choose to follow it. You get to choose all of it, how you write, how you live, what you do, how you do it, when you do it, how much you grow, what you share, and who you share it with. And by choosing the writing path, I don't mean making some big statement by quitting your job or declaring to everyone that you're going to write a novel. I mean committing quietly in your heart to choosing writing over and over, to walking through the world with writer's eyes, noticing your life unfolding and writing about it in whatever format appeals to you. And when you do that, before you know it, writing will have expanded to become a bigger part of your life. And I promise you, that is a wonderful thing. There's a passage in the lovely little book, How Poetry Can Change Your Heart, that I want to share with you. The book is by Andrea Gibson and Megan Falley, and it's published by Chronicle Books. And while the passage is talking about poetry, it could be referring to any kind of writing. And it goes like this. You deserve to have poetry in your life, to read things that delight you, to write things that set you free, to notice the poetry in the mundane until the mundane becomes fascinating. Remember, you too are the poem, and it's never too late for your heart to change in the direction of more magic, more beauty, more expansion, more purple, more wonder. I also want you to know that as soon as you choose the writing path, as soon as you make that quiet commitment in your heart, you will see that there is confirmation everywhere. In fact, as soon as you start paying attention to the need to choose, even before you do so, you'll find confirmation everywhere. And by confirmation, I mean signs from the universe, people stepping onto your path to help you, doors opening for you, feathers or hearts or whatever symbol has meaning for you appearing everywhere. Books falling off shelves, opening up pages with a message that happens to be exactly what you need to read at that moment. It doesn't matter what your faith or beliefs, if you open your eyes and look for these kinds of signs, serendipitous coincidences or whatever you want to call them, you'll be comforted and reassured in your choice when you find them. I also want you to know that who you walk with matters. People can love you and not be interested in your writing. It's a sad fact about the writing life, but it's true. And the upside of it means it frees you from having to share your writing with the people closest to you if they don't appreciate it. I also want you to know that not all writing groups are created equally. Don't assume that just because there's a writing group near you, it's the right one for you. You need to choose your people carefully. An essential part of becoming a fearless writer is building a network of people you can trust for soul nourishment, support and encouragement, and all of that without criticism or any sense of competition. Your journey is going to be very different if you surround yourself with people who share an idea of creative success that is not about validation and fame, but about experience, beauty, truth, and contributing to the world. Often those who really get it are those who are doing it too. They know what it means to keep showing up without knowing what is going to arrive. They know the importance of leaving the day at the door to enter the circle and write. They don't judge or criticize your writing to feed their own ego. They encourage you and they celebrate with you while knowing that that is just a byproduct of your work and not the point of the work. And they commiserate with you when things go wrong, as you do with them. I go into all of this in more detail in Chapter 4 of The Way of the Fearless Writer, where we explore how to find such writerly friends, how to invite more serendipity into your writing life, and why our origins matter a lot and not at all. And you'll also find a lot of exercises that are going to encourage you along the writing path, so I do hope that you will check that out. But perhaps most importantly, something else I want you to know this week is if you're feeling intimidated in any way or doubting yourself because perhaps you don't feel like you have the skills or the education needed to be a writer, whatever you think those skills and education are, I want you to know that you do not need any qualifications to walk this path. And to assure you about that, I'm going to share a bit of my own journey. In my writing classes, I'm often asked about my writing path, whether I have an MFA, whether I always knew I wanted to write a book, how I got my agent, whether I wrote my first book alongside a full-time job or on sabbatical or whatever. And no two writers' stories are the same, but it's always interesting to know how someone shifted from one situation to another and perhaps what influence their childhood and environment has had on their choices. And I think it's especially helpful if hearing that story busts a myth that writing is some faraway lofty goal that we can only aspire to when we have time, money, or whatever else we see as an obstacle, or if we think that writing is something for other people. If sharing my story can help bust that myth for one person, it is worth sharing. So here's the story of my writing path in a nutshell. I grew up in a cozy home surrounded by books. We didn't have a huge amount of money, but there was always money for books, and I think that sent an important message to me. I remember my mum kept a bin bag under the stairs, and on rainy days we'd get it out, reach in and pull out a new book, just like a treasure. So in that way, books have always been a treat and a comfort to me, as well as a repository of information about other worlds, an escape, a promise of adventure. And I've been a voracious reader all my life. My best friend at primary school, Kirsty, was a big reader too, and I remember having a sleepover at her house where we ate strawberry-flavoured Punch and Judy toothpaste for a midnight feast while lying next to each other reading in her room, and I thought it was a brilliant thing to do. We used to make our own newspapers on her dad's computer before we had a computer in my own house, and I always had a project on the go, a scrapbook of some kind or another, a five-year diary, and curiously, when I think about it, I was always more interested in writing down stuff that I actually noticed in the world rather than stories that I made up, even though I read a lot of fiction. I also have had an unhealthy stationery addiction from the age of about 5, probably, which still plagues me today. And consequently, I have boxes and boxes of journals filled with my scribblings. I was one of those children who really loved school. I had a couple of wonderful English teachers. Mrs. Sadler Hall was my favourite because she taught us new words every Friday, and I love new words. But I only studied English until the age of 16, at which point I dropped it in favour of maths, physics, economics and general studies at A-level. I don't really know why, except I think I thought those subjects would serve me better in my career as an accountant, which for some reason I had decided I wanted to do. Every now and then, when I couldn't sleep, I would stare out of my bedroom window and allow myself to daydream about other potential career paths, like being a war reporter or presenting travel programmes on TV. But then I'd wake up in the morning and tell myself not to be ridiculous and get back to my plan of a safer path. I think I like the idea of a stable job, a nice house and car, maybe client meetings in fancy places. And I still can't believe this. I got a bookkeeping diploma at night class when I was 13. Kind of odd looking back, but I am glad my parents humoured me when I said I wanted to do that because it's definitely served me well in my understanding of the accounts of the business that I now run. Anyway, I digress. I just think it's interesting to think about all the pieces that come together along the way. So I was very set on this career as an accountant, and then in the summer after I turned 17, I had an incredible opportunity to crew on a sail training yacht in the Cuttisark Tall Ships Race from England to Spain across the Bay of Biscay. It was something that my college offered and we had to fundraise to pay for it. It was just an amazing chance. And during that race, I had some kind of awakening, which blew my life apart. It shattered the crystal ball that I'd been carrying, which had been showing me this path of accountancy, and I was just left with a pile of broken glass and no idea of what to do with it. If you want to read about that, you'll have to get yourself a copy of my book, Freedom Seeker, because I wrote all about it. But safe to say that I came back from that trip with very different ideas about what I wanted to study at university. All I knew was that I wanted to go on an adventure, and the easiest way to do that seemed to be to choose a language that would give me a study year abroad, except I didn't speak any languages. I hadn't opted to take any for A-level, so most university courses were unavailable to me. The only option was to choose something that is really difficult and relatively obscure, so not many people applied for it. And these days, a lot more people study challenging languages from scratch at university, and they're offered at much earlier levels within the school system. But back then, it was rare. And at the time, my option seemed to be Japanese, Chinese, Russian, or Arabic. And instead of weighing up the options carefully, I did something completely out of character and used the children's rhyme game Eeny, Meeny, Miny, Moe and landed on Japanese. And when I look back, it does seem to be a very random, bold, and naive way to choose a university course. And yet it has been so perfect for me. And I wonder whether it was random after all. Perhaps I was always going to land on Japanese. Anyway, I went to uni and I got completely swallowed up by a language course that had only 1 hour a week of grammar explanation in English, and the rest was taught entirely in Japanese by Japanese people from day one. And we're talking about the fact that on day one, I didn't even know how to say hello in Japanese. It was one of the most challenging things I've ever done, and I nearly failed my first year, actually. But I begged them to let me go to Japan in my second year. And once I was there, I was posted with a homestay family who spoke no English. And I found my way through necessity and I completely fell in love with it. That's not to say it ever became easy. In fact, you can read about how tough it was and what that toughness taught me in my book, Wabi Sabi. If you've ever learned a foreign language as an adult, you'll know how the learning path is definitely not linear, and it can be really tough. But Japan felt familiar to me in a way I can't explain, and I knew that I'd found something that would be an important part of my world for the rest of my life. All this time, I had been keeping journals, and if I think about it, at university, I presented on local radio, I did an internship at the BBC, I wrote for the student newspaper. On my study year in Kyoto, I wrote for the local newspaper called Life in Kyoto. And I wrote reams of letters to friends back home. So I was always writing without perhaps being conscious that I was writing. That's until my first paid commission, which was for Wanderlust magazine at the end of my second year of uni. You can read all about that in The Way of the Fearless Writer. But having writing pay for an adventure was a real revelation to me. But it still didn't change very much. I was studying hard still with my Japanese degree, and I graduated 2 years later, and I got a job in Japan, acting as a coordinator for international relations on the JET program in a beautiful place in the snowy north of the country called Yamagata. And I ended up having my own TV show in Japanese, which was both dreadful and hilarious. And then I moved to Tokyo for a few years to work before coming back to England to do a master's degree in interpreting and translating between Japanese and English. And that was actually a fascinating way of learning more about my own language as we explored the nuances of words and how they change depending on the context that they're in. But all this time, there's still been no formal studying of writing. After a few more years working for big organisations, which gave me lots of opportunities to travel the world, and sometimes to write about it in reports and on websites, I had another major realization, which led me to setting up my company, Do What You Love, which offers online courses to help people reconfigure their lives to do what they love. That was in late 2010, and the first few years were a wild ride. We built several partnerships, things really took off, but it was a real challenge too, because there are very few online courses about. So the technology, which I knew nothing about, was pretty basic. And people weren't used to going online to learn things. So there was a whole education piece that needed to happen. And that's really when I started writing a lot, even without realizing that I was doing it. I was writing course content, I was writing blog posts and newsletters and social media posts. This is back in the early days of blogging as well. I was writing sales pages for retreats and workshops that I dreamed up. And I can see now that all that writing for my business was incredibly good training for writing books later on. It wasn't until several years later, in 2016, when I was pregnant with my second child, that I collapsed under the weight and pressure of all I had built and began a desperate search for an answer to the question, when you're feeling trapped, how do you set yourself free? That became the idea for my first book, Freedom Seeker. I wrote the proposal on maternity leave with my second child. The first agent I pitched it to signed me. Hay House gave me a book deal, and my journey as an author began. To be honest, I think that first book taught me how to write a book, and it paved the way for me to write my second book, Wabi Sabi, which was the first one to really connect all the threads of my life: Japanese language and culture, doing what you love and living well, and my interest in beauty and aesthetics. All the time and effort that I put into learning Japanese paid off, not just because it helped me set out my stall to the publisher when I was pitching for that book deal, but because my experiences of living and working in Japan and my deep love of the language and culture made me see the world in a completely different way. And that is the lens through which I see all that I write about. I'll talk more about authoring later in the series, but I wanted to share this with you so that you know that you don't have to have any particular qualification to be a writer. You don't need an MFA, although if an MFA will give you the structure, discipline, and tools you need to make writing a bigger part of your life, of course, go for it. If a course on writing a novel is going to help you get it written, do it, but you don't need to have done a course in order to write a novel. You don't need excellent grammar and spelling to write, to get joy from the process of writing. Of course, it's worth working on those things and using available technology to help you. But don't ever let a lack of education or training in those kinds of things get in the way of spilling what's in your head and heart. The most important thing is to be curious, to follow what interests you, to listen to the world and write about it. You don't need anyone's permission or any certificates to do that. And it's important to read a lot too. The more you read or listen to books, the more you expose yourself to other points of view, other ways of writing, other ways of communicating ideas. Sometimes you'll be blown away by what a masterful writer can do with words. Other times, to be honest, it's quite comforting to see that almost anything can be turned into a book. And the options for what you can write about are absolutely endless. Don't just read the kind of writing that you want to do either. Read everything: poetry, travel writing, long-form profiles of interesting people, memoir, novels, self-help books. Anything can be an inspiration. Take yourself into a library or a bookshop and maybe let your intuition guide you to a particular shelf sometime this week. Pick something from it and let it be an inspiration to you. Perhaps the most important lesson for me on this writing path has been that everything is connected. Nothing is wasted. Whatever wiggly-woggly path you have followed to get to where you are today is just perfect. It's ripe with inspiration. Some of the people that you've met along that path were probably writing mentors in disguise. Even if you feel like you've jumped from one thing to another, that your work lacks meaning, or you're stuck in a rut having done the same thing for way too long, there are going to be seeds that you've planted along the way which could nourish your writing if you just take a moment to look at where you might have planted them. It's never too late to begin. I didn't have my first book published until the year I turned 40. It was published by Hay House, whose founder Louise Hay, author of multi-million copy bestseller You Can Heal Your Life, set up the company in her late 50s. Her final book was published when she was 87, just 3 years before she died at the age of 90 in 2017. So no more wasting time worrying about whether it's too soon for you or too late for you. Just pick up your pen and write. And without wanting to sound like I'm trying to sell you something, I want to let you know that if you feel called to take a class from me, all my courses are on sale for up to 50% off in our annual sale at dowhatyouloveforlife.com right now. I'm telling you that because I know that some people find it really difficult to invest in their writing path. And if it helps you to be able to do that at a huge discount, then now is the time. You're not going to find any courses on how to write better sentences or how to structure a novel, because I don't teach that. What you will find is courses on how to excavate your life through writing, how to write a commercially compelling book proposal, how to reconfigure your life to do what you love, how to get properly organized so you can give some structure to the chaos of creativity, and those kinds of things. So if that sounds appealing to you, then go and have a browse at dowhatyouloveforlife.com and see if there is something there which can be a friend as you walk this writing path. Anyway, enough chat. It's time to write. If you've been listening to every episode of this series, you'll be familiar by now with how we do this, but let me refresh your memory. So for the writing part of the podcast, first we breathe together, and then I read a poem as a spark. We have 2 minutes of silence in which to respond to that poem on the page, and then I give you a writing prompt and invite you to write for a further 10 minutes in silence. At the end of the 10 minutes, you'll hear a gong and I will wrap up the podcast. If you'd rather keep writing, just pause the audio and keep going until you've finished. I'd love to hear how you get on with this. Feel free to share by tagging me at Beth Kempton, hashtag Fearless Writer Podcast. Okay, so make sure you're somewhere comfortable where you can write, and let's begin. First of all, take a few slow, deep breaths here. Inhale. Exhale. Inhale. Exhale. Keep going for a few more breaths to arrive fully here in this writing moment. Today's spark is a poem called It Is Everywhere by Remy Graves, which can be found in one of my favourite anthologies of poetry called She Is Fierce, edited by Anna Sampson, which is published by Pan Macmillan. So, It Is Everywhere by Remy Graves. Green leaves, wind-kissed, closed palms, fresh hope. Deep river. Free flow, no signs, open road. Wide sky, grow wings, feel light, dream big. No frame, new eyes. From dark, find light. Hug air, laugh loud. Breathe deep, dance wild. Smile wide, shut eyes. Hold chest, close mind. Ask cloud, ask wind. Ask earth, ask field, how to live free. Hold on, let go. Give trust, lend heart. Fall down, get up. Eat fear, drink hope. And now I invite you to stand up. If you can't stand up right now, it's totally fine to do this sitting down. Just sit tall in your chair. If you can go outside, that would be lovely. If you're going to do that, just pause the audio and take your notebook and a pen with you. So as you're ready, stand tall. Open your arms wide with your chest open to the sky, as if you're a bird in flight. Close your eyes or lower your gaze and imagine flying high in the sky, flying over mountains, flying over forests, flying over cities, or flying over the ocean. Feel the air rush past as you fly. Look down on all that is beneath you. Breathe deeply and drink in the feeling of flight. Keep flying for a few more breaths. Now expand your awareness to hear any sounds in your immediate vicinity. Notice what direction the sounds are coming from and listen for how they arise and dissipate. Now expand your awareness further to take in any sounds in the distance, any sounds right at the edge of what you can hear. Notice what direction those sounds are coming from and sense how they arise and disappear. And now take a couple more breaths here, slowly open your eyes, and tell this to the page. What does freedom mean to you? Write whatever wants to be written. And that, my friend, is 10 minutes. Feel free to keep writing if you like. I will be back next week talking about the joy of journaling and why it can be so good for our well-being. In the meantime, be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss any episodes. And if you've enjoyed it, please leave a lovely rating and review so others can discover it and tell all your writerly friends. You've been listening to the Fearless Writer podcast with me, Beth Kempton. This podcast was produced by Untapped Talent, and the theme music at the end of the podcast is The River, sung by Danny Nichols and co-written by Danny Nichols and me, Beth Kempton. You can listen to the full edition of this gorgeous song, All About Life, on iTunes, Spotify, Bandcamp, or wherever you get your music. You can dive deeper into your writing practice with my book, The Way of the Fearless Writer. Complete with 50 original writing exercises, I hope it will help you release the gold that is buried deep inside, spilling it as ink onto the page. And remember, my friend, you are a writer, and the world needs your medicine. Lead you home.